up on later today. So let's get into our conversation. You know, it's so interesting because I think today there's been a really good flow with the content we've been looking at. Professor Mcebisi Ntletshana, you know, spoke to us about how the current systems that we have, the corruption that has become endemic in our society, and how that spills over from the party of the ANC right into how government does things. He painted a very good picture of that. And Somato Dafikeng in many ways gave us a picture of what those things ultimately may mean for South Africa when we look at the projections, especially for 2030, and what this country is going to look like. And youth unemployment becomes such a crucial part of that conversation, because we know that young people are the majority of people in this country. So when we talk about the unemployment rate being high, effectively what we're saying is that young people in this country do not have jobs. Young people in this country are looking for different types of opportunities. And Bernstein is somebody who is an expert in this field. She's the head of the Center for Development and Enterprise, and she joins me now. Anne, good morning. It's a pleasure to have you with us today.
Hi, Kathy. It's a pleasure to be with you and your listeners.
Sure. You know, the picture of youth unemployment is one that has been bleak for a number of years, and I suppose what makes it so unfortunate is the fact that it doesn't seem to be changing, and it doesn't seem that we get to a point where we are doing any better ultimately with why employment looks the way that it does in this country. You can give us a bit of context to that in terms of the latest report that you've issued and the kind of reforms that would be needed to fundamentally change the picture.
Well, let me start by talking about, has the picture changed or hasn't it? I think
sure.
On the one hand, it has changed, but for the worse.
Mm.
And so the numbers of young unemployed people just keep on going up and up and up.
Mm.
And it's almost in inverse proportion to the amount South Africans talk about this. When we first started talking about the importance of focusing on youth unemployment, it was a challenge to move it up the list of priorities in the country.
Mm.
But now we've had all sorts of summits and presidential initiatives and this and that and the next thing, but the numbers just keep getting worse. And, you know, if you're aged between 15 and 34, over 50% unemployed pre-COVID.
Mm.
In the last decade, some 2.2 million young people joined the workforce, but actually the number of young people in employment just went down and down.
Mm.
So the situation keeps getting worse. On the other hand, the president in February said that this was going to be one of his top priorities. So that's important, and we certainly hope that it won't be overwhelmed by other priorities, so that the country can focus much more seriously on the issue of youth unemployment.
Mm.
Perhaps I can just say, I think the reason why we never seem to make progress is important to reflect on. What holds us back? Why is this such a big challenge? And first and foremost, South Africa has had a low and declining rate of economic growth over the last decade, and that's key. You won't get employment unless you get much faster growth.
Mm.
And people often want to put the one issue on the shelf. Let's talk about youth unemployment and how terrible it is, then we'll shelve it, and then we'll talk about something else. It's intimately related to the structure of our economy. We have an economy that encourages people to use capital rather than labor, to talk very generally, and which doesn't encourage employers to hire young, inexperienced, new work seekers.
Mm.
And people coming out of very bad schools through no fault of their own, they live in communities where often very few people work, and why would an employer want to hire them?
Mm.
Unless we can reduce the wages on which you can employ young people and make it easier that if this young person doesn't fit in with your company in some way, for some reason, that you can get rid of them easily. That would decrease the risks that employers are taking to hire people.
You talk about a decade of declining economic growth and this age group of 15 to 34-year-olds. And I'm just trying to put that into context. And I'm looking at some of the people that I may have known in my own life who for about 10 years would be struggling and really struggling to find access into employment. And, you know, they would have been around 2023, 2022, 10 years ago. And the situation for some of the people that I know, including some of my friends, simply hasn't changed. And I wonder if there's a particular generation that you think is going to feel the worst effect of this, and the extent to which their lives are caught perpetually in the cycle that they too seem to be unable to break?
A very important question. So let's talk before COVID and then talk a bit on, you know, let's hold the discussion sort of for the impact of COVID. So until February this year, it's really important when looking at young people to distinguish between people who have a tertiary degree, who've actually gone to university and got a degree, because their employment prospects are just phenomenally better, not great, but phenomenally better than if you're a young person who doesn't have a matric. So, and that's where the vast majority of young people are. They've come out of a bad schooling system and they probably didn't finish, and or they've just got a matric. But the difference is important. So the less education you have, the harder it is to get a job. The worse the economy is, the less space there is for new people, with or without matric. But it's much harder if you don't have education. So I don't know your friends, but there's nothing worse than a society making it difficult for young people to get into the workforce. It's terribly depressing, and it will affect them for the rest of their lives because they're kind of always behind, you know. So the impact of this is enormous, and that's why we've been arguing for such a long time that you can't just tweak South Africa's economy. You can't just say, oh, we've got probably one of the highest youth unemployment rates in the world, but we're not going to look at fundamental issues and fundamental changes that we have to make. And that's why I think nothing happens, because everyone wants to avoid the big issues, whether it's at the very basics of the quality of our schooling that we offer for the vast majority of people, or the training system that we have, which doesn't work very well, you know, post-school kind of training, the TVETs or other kinds of training for people. And then we don't want to look at why is it that in a country like ours where we have such an abundance of people looking for work, that we're not encouraging employers to hire more people. And that requires changing the labor market. So at every step of this, people just talk and talk and talk about what a challenge it is, but nobody wants to take the tough decisions that are required to fundamentally make this a country for young people instead of a country where we waste so many people's talents and resources and they just have no hope.
You know, and just perhaps to give a bit more context, because this particular generation that I'm looking at over this 10-year period are people who would have completed some level of qualification by the time that they were around 22, 23, right? And they struggled to get access to the workplace. And after a year or two of looking, they decide, let me stay in school. Let me go back to school, increase my qualification, because the criteria for the workplace seems to be so much higher than it was before. So first, if you just have a degree, you're not good enough. You need to get an honors degree or have some kind of postgraduate. They go for the postgraduate studies, but then suddenly you're overqualified. You can't get the intern job because now you have a master's degree. And so those are just some of the challenges. And even with the groups that were part of where you know, as young people were having these conversations, the number of people that happens to, for me, is quite surprising, because one would imagine that, you know, you have corporate that is waiting to pick up these young people who are employed, but then you certainly realize that you need so much more. And somehow in trying to meet the different criteria, people spend too much time out of the system of employment, such that when they are trying to get in, there's a younger crop of people that in fact look more lucrative to prospective employers.
Look, I think there are a number of issues here. So if we're talking about until about 2015, maybe 2016, if you got a degree from a university, your chances of getting employment were very high. If you got a diploma from some other kind of tertiary institution, you know, a TVET or something like that, your chances of employment were lower. That was how the economy was structured. But from about 2015-16, the economy started barely growing at all. And in that context, companies don't hire new people. They're struggling to hold on to the people they have and not retrench them. So that's why I'm saying to you, it's very important to distinguish between those lucky people who got a degree. They might not get the exact job they want. They might not have got, you know, the pay rate they wanted, but they would get a job. And that was for, irrespective of color, we are desperately short of skilled people. So I don't think the big challenge, but obviously for the people involved, it's very hard, but the big challenge for our society is to get growth going. If we can get growth going, we will hire the skilled people that we have, you know, with a degree who've done, you know, those people will get snapped up. Maybe not at the job they want, but they will get a job. It's the people who, and then if you've got a diploma, you're about 16% unemployed was the figure a few years ago. So, but then it's if you've just got a matric, harder and harder. Yeah. And if you don't have a matric, then you're really at the back of the queue.
Yeah.
So this was all before COVID. What I think is going to happen now, no one's 100% sure, but we know it's not good. The odds are that we're going to have more people joining the unemployment queues. And this is going to be a problem unless we make some changes, because these will be older people as well, more experienced, older people who are losing their jobs now, as you and I talk. And so they add to the numbers of the unemployed, and they are probably more likely in some respects to get a job because they have, you know, on paper, they have more to offer. So we're going to have to make some big decisions about wages and all sorts of things in order to try and get the economy going, firstly, very, very important, save as many firms as we have, help them to start thinking about expansion again and get new firms. But who's going to get jobs in that environment? We're going to have to think about the rules of the labor market.
And I'm just thinking, you know, because so much of what you're saying rests on the country's ability to create more jobs. And without unlocking certain industries in our economy, and without, you know, people always point to we need a more manufacturing intensive economy, because that in itself will spur on some kind of growth, and it will create the need for more people to become employed. I wonder, what are the solutions that you particularly look at when you come up with ideas on how this growth stagnation can be overcome, and to what extent does it take into account the changing world? So you're also now trying to find jobs for a generation of young people who are online, who are technology savvy, whose approach to the world is completely different to what their parents may be.
Oh, lots of questions. Good, very good questions, all rolled into one.
Sorry about that.
No. Look, first and foremost, you have to say to yourself, what does South Africa need to do in order to start growing the economy again? And we need to think of 3 to 4% growth per annum. That's what we desperately need. Now, there are big choices that have to be made. We firstly have to fix our fiscal crisis. You're going to see when the minister gives his budget on Wednesday, the country's almost bankrupt. Now, that will affect how fast we can grow, because it means it has all sorts of implications. So we both need growth in order to help fix the fiscal gap, and we need to fix that fiscal deficit in order to get growth going again. So that's one of the examples of the very important things we have to do. There are other things we have to do to get growth going again. We have to become a place that investors want to risk their money, domestic and foreign. And that, again, means we have to look at what are the rules, what are the issues. There's a very familiar list that the ratings agencies and every international organization has given South Africa, and we need the political leaders to have the courage to make these choices. So there are a whole set of, let's call them reforms, Kathy, that you have to do to get growth going again. Secondly, I'm afraid we have to do some serious changes to the labor market to make a more labor-intensive economy, to make employers and new firms want to hire people. And we could start with making it much easier for smaller firms to hire people and to sort of get rid of a whole lot of regulations and that apply to small firms. So we could try and do that, smaller new firms. I think one of the possible opportunities, you've heard me talk about the need for labor-intensive manufacturing, because that's what countries all over the rest of the world have found to be a fantastic way of getting people who've never worked before into the workforce, earning a wage, and then moving on to other things, and those firms moving on to other things. They don't all stay making basic T-shirts. They move on to make more sophisticated products, and then the workers can learn more skills and get better wages and so on. So South Africa might have an opportunity, and we should certainly be focusing on this. With the disruption of global supply chains because of COVID, you know, everyone's thinking anew, and where do we make PPE, and how do we make it closer to home, and why are we spreading out our supply chains so far all over the world? Maybe South Africa, if we move quickly, could say we want to make certain kinds of clothing, and we're going to take up that slack in the market, and we're going to be competitive.
All right, Anne, I'm going to allow you to finish your thought after this quick break. I'm in conversation with Anne Bernstein. She's the head of the Center for Development and Enterprise. I'll also take a couple of your calls.